He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
The headline for this show is Airless Tires may be on the way to a car dealership with their cars.
I saw something about that.
I don't know how distant future, but Michelin is working on tests with airless tires. And if Michelin is doing it, Goodyear and others will not be far behind.
Well, they've already done it.
Well, not to the no.
Didn't we start with that? Didn't we start with that 120 years ago?
Oh, yes, but the cars were much lighter then. The speeds were much slower. And you didn't have the heat buildup that can build up in tires. And you don't have the driving characteristics of the cars of today. And the drivers driving the cars of today, they probably put a lot more stress on those early airless tires that would never hold up in today's world. But the technology of tires has obviously increased a whole lot over the last century. And now they're going to go airless, which would eliminate the idea of flat tires occurring to anybody on interstates or wherever you drive.
So what does it have instead?
Cost?
No, what does it have instead of
air? It has flexible rubber interspersed with fiberglass strands and other strengthening substances so that they will flex as you hit bumps. They will fit on normal wheels that currently use air-filled or nitrogen-filled tires. And they'll be just about, probably more expensive. And they may be as comfortable, they may not be. I maintain that the run-flat tires are not as comfortable, although I believe the comfort factor has increased. Jay, do you have anything running run-flat tires at the moment?
No.
No. Have you have any opinion about it?
No.
Have you driven on airless tires?
No.
I can't imagine that they haven't come
I don't know that they're out there for the public to try yet. This is very new.
This is very new, and I didn't even read much about it.
The good news is you can't comment too much.
No, it's not that. It's just that this is either one of those what could possibly go wrong or not.
That's why they need to test it for thousands, if not millions of miles in all kinds of we don't know how they'll operate in the wintertime.
This is not happening anytime soon.
No, it's probably 3 to 5 years off.
Well, it's a good thing to start the show with then, isn't it?
It is a good thing.
We need future.
Right, we need future.
Vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Car Driver has a fabulous article for all our listeners who are convinced that premium gas is worth paying a lot more for. And in fact, Car and Driver has finally come out with an ultimate test, and they have categorically suggested that you are wasting your money with most of the new cars by buying premium, even if the manufacturer recommends or
mandates
premium gasoline. The only issue that this magazine did not address, which is very fascinating to me, and I'm going to try and write them and see if I can find the answer for our listeners, is how much does it cost the manufacturers to make premium-grade gasoline? Because as we know and we've talked about, the premium of the price of premium over regular is exorbitant in many cases, and out west it's almost nothing in many cases.
So what were the findings? In
findings, they had four vehicles they used. They used a BMW M5 competition, Dodge Charger RT with a Hemi engine, Honda CR-V Touring all-wheel drive, and a Ford F-150 Limited 4x4 with the top horse-powered V6 engine in that truck. And the fuel economies were less than 1 mile per gallon, and in some cases, less than a half a mile per gallon over use of non-premium gasoline.
So the premium gas was more efficient.
Not by, if you want to call 23.2 MPG
versus
23.5.
It's a yes or no question.
So it was,
not enough to make you want to buy it.
Okay.
Okay?
But more efficient.
That's categorically the answer. Not enough to make you want to buy it.
Right. Which is just out of curiosity, this is not to take anybody's part. It's just from a numeric standpoint, before anyone interprets anything, the premium at least is still numerically more efficient.
Yes, correct? If you want to try to boost the use of premium gasoline, yes.
No, it just is. But it comes at a cost. What was performance like?
Performance was as follows. The 1/4 mile time with regular grade gas for the Honda CR-V was 15.7 seconds at 90 miles per hour. With premium, it was 15.8 seconds at 90 miles per hour, which is actually slower using premium grade gas. For the BMW Competition M5, it was 10.9 seconds at 130 miles per hour for the quarter mile.
That's
with regular grade gas, and 10.8 seconds to 130 miles an hour with premium grade. And this is 87 versus 93 octane.
Virtually identical.
Virtually identical. And the same goes, well, for the Ford F-150 Limited, it was 14.5 seconds at 95 versus 14.0 seconds with premium grade at 99. So that was a significant difference, if you want to call 4/10 or 5/10 of a second better.
Just for argument's sake, pickup trucks are now accelerating like muscle cars.
That's true, they are.
Yesteryear. Just 14-second quarter miles are fast by anybody's standards.
But so the quarter mile was not significant either. In effect, it basically isn't worth paying for it unless you think you can feel the minuscule differences in mileage improvement .
But here's the thing. I think, and this is the only question that matters, is what are the consequences on the engine? Is it okay, yes or no, to put regular gas in a car? And you're talking about expensive cars here. BMW M5 is a $90,000 car or more. Is it worth being cheap on the gas? Is there a risk to the engine? And that's what people are stressing about.
No.
If it is okay, fine. Then people will
put... Car and driver's opinion, not specifically stated in that way, is yes, it's fine, because the computers are such, the programs are such, that they are basically reading what the engine is drinking and adjusting everything accordingly so that you don't have knock problems and problems that would otherwise take on what Jay just implied might happen, which would be engine damage if something happened.
Could the same happen with biofuel?
Biofuel wasn't even...
No, I'm just curious if the computers is that...
Well, there is no biofuel in...
Well, I know somebody who put, and I hope she's not listening...
Biofuel?
Managed to put diesel in a gasoline-powered Audi. And I don't even know how you get the nozzle in.
Well, I also do that, too.
And the car did not run very well, still doesn't.
Remember the person you had to rescue in Torrington who put...
Correct. Well, I rescued somebody, or I didn't rescue, but I told her what to do. And the fuel company...
Well, right?
What?
Did she do that as well? Or did she put water in?
She put diesel in.
Yeah.
How the nozzle got in the filler neck, I don't know. But
so it's a woman thing?
We had a problem with water, Jill. You're right.
I don't know.
Actually, I rescued somebody who ended up with a lot of water in their gasoline. And in that case, the distributor and they had to pay for the repair of the engine, which I think was something like $7,000 by the time they got through. Cleaning injectors and replacing what had to be replaced because of water, extreme water infestation is not the right word, but pollution to the gas that was filling up a car. But this was an interesting article because, of course, I have a long-running argument with a couple of people about this exact topic, and I'm going to let them read the article, and then they can still say whether they want to spend up to 60 cents more per gallon.
Well, I will just say I am a what's the opposite of a victim? I'm a beneficiary of your view because I have probably saved over the years. I cannot tell you how much in gasoline.
Well, they suggested, I think in the article, they suggested that if you average 25 miles per gallon traveling 15,000 miles a year, that it amounts to a $354 annual surcharge for using the more expensive stuff. Now, that's
not here. Here it's much more.
It might be.
Having said that, if you're driving a $90,000 BMW M5, I don't think it really matters.
First, you can afford to put whatever you want in there. And second, the psychological aspect, which is what Jay's inferring might be the case, of knowing that you're putting appropriate gas in your mind into your $90,000 car.
You've been marketing
you'll buy it
for,
no matter what I am saying to listeners on this radio show and or car and driver is saying to all their readers out there. I'm waiting for 2 issues from now when the backfires, which is the letters to the editor section, arrive in car and driver.
It's called backfires.
And it's sometimes the most interesting part of the magazines, all magazines who have letters to the editor to read about tests and whatever goes on in the automotive industry that these magazines write about. But I'm really glad that somebody finally addressed it. And Car and Driver has been known for addressing, if not sensitive issues, significant issues periodically in their magazine over time.
Yeah, I just wish I would love someone to address the, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to either ruin these cars or not and do the long-term studies. I would just, that's my.
Well, that takes 10 years, you know, that takes 2 or 3 years and 50,000 miles.
I'm available.
Well, they have long-term tests.
Yeah.
They,
no, I agree.
They get cars in their fleets, all the magazines do, and they will have tests that will last upwards of 25, 30, or 40,000 miles. And they do give you long-term results about how many times it went in for repairs, what the mileage was, the best and the worst over the time, and other factors that you are wishing to know about. But they don't do it universally. There are too many cars and models out there to be able to possibly cover it. And nobody would know what you or I or Jay might buy next in order to get that information out there before we went and decided what we were going to buy. Yes, Jay.
No, I was going to say 3 out of the 4 cars in that test were turbocharged cars.
Correct.
And you know, a lot of things come into play, but gas and turbochargers can compensate for
the only one that wasn't was the Charger RT.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting article. They picked 4 cars of varying types to do this on. Varying degrees of horsepower and all that, and it's an interesting article. Let's move on, Jay. What would you like to say? Okay. Four Wheeler Magazine, which I now get, had a very interesting feature test.
You get what? Four Wheeler Magazine?
Yeah. All cars are 4 wheels. Jay's going to say he's getting ready.
No, I was going to say
that. This is about the Gladiator, which is the newest Jeep product on the.
So is this for off-road?
They actually did a first drive test of a Gladiator. The significant portion of their interest in it was the off-road capability of the vehicle. The on-road capability of the vehicle is not faultless, but darn well near. They call it the best midsize pickup truck ride in the industry. I don't know whether that's true or not. I will say that test drives are very subjective. I mentioned that I took a test drive in a Gladiator 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I found it very tight, very comfortable. I only went for 10 miles, and I didn't get on all kinds of roads. I did get on a dirt road with some potholes in it. I found they use Fox shocks, which are very high performance, high grade shock absorber with good absorptive and compression specifications to it, which keeps the truck from bouncing up and down if they work properly on roads of less than perfect surface. And I don't disagree with much of what they said. I did not take it off road to find out about the rock crawling capabilities and these other things. It's got such high-tech stuff in it. It is easily probably the most adept four-wheel drive system in any of the vehicles out there, no matter who the manufacturer is.
How much will it take you back?
And there's another magazine that's got a test between a Mercedes and a Wrangler Rubicon, and I want to read that test, too, to see how it does. But I bet the Rubicon holds itself up very well against some Mercedes. What is that fabulous Mercedes version? SUV, Jay, that we see
about
10 of them in the country here.
The G-Class.
The G-Class. And that's known to be a very effective off-road vehicle as well. But I haven't read it yet, so I can't comment further on the show.
I'm curious about what are the must, if I just had to have the latest, greatest thing, what would I want?
In Jeep?
In Mercedes and anything.
G-Class, well, Mercedes.
You're not a Mercedes person in general.
I don't particularly.
Jay has already told us what his favorite vehicle is.
No, that changes.
It changes. Yeah, it has
it
changed.
Has to. Yeah, but it's just one of those. If you're interested in something, it has to change. It can't just be one thing.
As we have said before, If you arrive at a dealership and get roped into going into talking to a salesperson in a test drive, their goal
is,
I know that, but you also have an opinion about what you want to go see.
Come out with a Jeep then.
No, I'm not. That's not it. It's just
It's the dealer's goal not to let you get to another dealership.
Right. It's my goal to find the car that I want. I think they still have Robin's number at Honda someplace because they wanted me to get that car so badly.
They sure did.
So if you want another cool wagon, you better hurry up. I mean, if you want a BMW wagon, you better hurry up. The new BMW 3 Series wagon is absolutely gorgeous.
Have you driven it?
No. Okay. I've seen pictures of it. I've read about it. Unfortunately, BMW of North America is still wishy-washy and probably not going to bring the car to the U.S.
Because wagons aren't in?
But I do know somebody who drives a very nice, if you look around town, Sharon, Lakeville, Salisbury, there's a very nice, I don't know what they call that, BMW Motorsport blue wagon. Black wheels, it's absolutely gorgeous, but it's the last of the outgoing 3 Series BMW.
Now, this is Ren. We covered this a couple of some shows back. You can still go to Europe and get a car, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, but it's going to have to be. You can't come back with a European model. You're buying a U.S. model car. Right. I mean, in the 80s, back, quote unquote, in the day, you could go and buy gray market cars. Remember when you could go to Europe in the 1980s and buy any luxury brand, Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, and import them here and convert them to U.S. specs, and it would still cost you half the price, and you could get models that you couldn't necessarily get here.
Does the same thing work in Asia or not?
Asia, no. I know. I've never seen anybody say you could go to Asia to pick up a Hyundai or an Asian-produced car and get the same benefits of traveling around the countryside and then have it shipped back here to their dealership of choice where you might have ordered the car. It's only been Europe that I've known that to happen. But I want to move on to steroidal trucks. Well, we all know...
We just talked about the Gladiator.
Yes, well, we're going to go and move over to the Ford Raptor. And the Raptor is known to the pickup world as
being the
He-Man of the pickup trucks.
You notice the new Robin here?
And
it's all about trucks.
He's getting four-wheeler
magazine. He's driving Gladiators.
Well, you know,
he's dreaming of Raptors.
He's testing
Ram trucks.
It's a new Robin. Is the four-wheeler, is that for trucks? Just please tell me.
It's for Jeep type of vehicles,
Jeep type,
SUVs.
Okay. Yes.
I haven't gotten it very long to give you
Raptors.
A rundown.
Go Raptors.
Raptors, our local Ford dealership.
Congratulations, Toronto Raptors. Go on.
What?
Nothing. Basketball.
Okay.
Congratulations, Toronto Raptors.
Our Ford dealer, right around the corner from this broadcast booth, has got three Ford Raptors sitting in their lot. Two are called Rocky Ridge versions of the Ford Raptor. Oh, my. OMG. I don't know whether anybody will buy them or not. Actually, I think one was not a dealer vehicle. I think it was an owner vehicle because it looked like it was in for service. But this Rocky Ridge is a supplier who modifies off the assembly line produced vehicles for Ford in the Raptor version, at least. And they add a package that costs $23,800 above and beyond the Raptor price, which on the one that was not converted, I think was $70,000 plus a $6,000 market adjustment markup.
So we're talking about $99,000?
We're talking, 89. This is ridiculous. There's no other
way. I agree. I agree with Jay. This is ridiculous.
What? Well, I mean, don't know. What are you getting? Ooh, Tarzan?
I'm not going there.
No, I'm not going there either.
So let's get back down to earth.
Stupid expensive wheels, stupid expensive add-ons that won't do anything more around our northwest corner than the regular Raptor will, and it'll be just somebody who wants to spend that kind of money to ride above the rest.
So there is that element to it. All right.
Yeah.
We have 5 minutes. Go on. Because, and then you're going to have to do your safety thing. How long do you want for that?
Well, like 10 minutes.
Okay. Well,
right. Okay, then start because we got five. You can give right. 10 minutes worth of talking.
There was a sensationalistic, is that a word even?
Sure.
Sure. It is now.
Accident on I-95 over the weekend, Sunday in the wee hours of the morning. a state trooper got rear-ended.
It was
pretty bad. And so for those of you who have not heard about it, a state trooper put his flashers on, got into the left breakdown, so the left side of the highway, to help a motorist who was in difficulty and got rear-ended by another vehicle.
With such force that the thing just crumpled.
Well, actually, if you look at the cell of the car, it resisted. It survived pretty well.
And the people who rammed into him survived
as well. So kudos to car manufacturers. Cars are, again, way better than they've ever been. But there was a lot of outrage at how people did not slow down for emergency lights, and how could this guy run into the cop? Well, there were allegations that maybe he was impaired, and that could be. I think, and this is just my theory, I think the answer is a lot simpler, and some people may not like it. I think those emergency lights are way too bright in the middle of the night, and what I think happened is simply that this person got blinded, got surprised by those flashers, got blinded, and just assumed that, not seeing anything, the cop was going to be stopping on the right side of the road and just aim for the left side of the cop and hit the wall and hit the cop. It's that simple. I'm
going to jump in here because I know nothing about the accident. And I think some of Jay's idea, especially the blinded by the light situation, is a good one. I'm not sure about thinking that the guy was trying to think that he was on the right side of the road, so he headed left. I think that's far-fetched. Because
not really.
It is far-fetched. Because if you're in the left lane already, you know you can't go any further left if you're not blinded, if you do not see.
And again, part of me is saying wait until the conclusions of the report come out.
Obviously.
The other thing is the undisputable fact is those lights are very, very bright. And I have personally come to emergency scenes where there were so many lights that it was really hard.
And I came upon one last night going to LaGuardia Airport on the Hutchinson Parkway where it diverged. There were fire trucks with lights flashing. There were at least half a dozen or more state troopers' lights flashing away. You couldn't even see the road. I don't know how many lanes were clogged up. The Hutch went left, the other roads went right, and there was a car that had been on fire being hauled onto a hauler. But, you know, way overkill from the, I don't know how many first aid responders you need for
the fact is the lights.
Everybody had slowed down to a, gotta look at this, crawl, and the Hutch, which was three lanes wide at this point.
Summertime. Cars are always burning on the Hutch. I don't know. Since I was a kid, it seems to be where you burn cars.
It's like if you're going to do something.
But seriously, I mean, so emergency lights, you need to slow down, you need to be careful, and you really need to look at where you're going, which is back to what I was saying last week. You know, look at where you're going. There's something else I'd like to mention on the safety topic is get to know the car you're driving. And for new drivers, when you get in a car, you need to know where the wipers are. You need to know where your emergency flashes are. You need to know where all the controls are. And a lot of that is standard in a lot of cars, but as the cars get more sophisticated, you know, some have more buttons, some have touch screens. Get to know the vehicle. I talked with a state trooper at Lime Rock this weekend who was saying, you know, they practice on simulators, and we were talking about simulators. They practice pursuits, doing hot pursuits while multitasking, getting on the radio, you know, checking other things, putting flashers on. And the bottom line is you cannot drive and multitask. It's virtually impossible. Focus on the driving. Know the car.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.